Welcome to Dear Watchers, a comic book omniverse podcast where we do a deep dive into the multiverse.
We are traveling through the storylines before and after that inspired or took inspiration from this week's amazing alternate universe. And your watchers on this journey continue to be me, Guido.
And me, Rob. Or is it really me, Rob? Do I just look like Rob?
You're Rob in quotes.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and I'll be Guido 4, which will all become clear-ish to listeners in a few minutes what even we are talking about.
Yes, but before we get to that, Guido, anything new in our multiverse?
Well, this episode is a special celebration for two reasons. One, it's being timed with the 4th of July, so we chose a very on-theme issue, universe to explore, because this episode is releasing on the 4th of July, 2022.
And we're nothing if, you know, patriotic Americans. You know, I wanted to do the Pledge of Allegiance to kick this episode off, but this commie fairy I co-host this podcast with nicks that idea.
They actually use the word fruit in the issue we read today. Fruit. So I'll be a commie fruit. Thank you very much. This is also our 52nd episode, so it's actually kind of our year anniversary episode, though we're not using it to celebrate and mark that moment. I guess it technically is a year of episodes.
Yeah.
Did you ever think we'd be here?
No. And I'm just thinking, you know, the next episodes are going to be the new 52. It's a comic book joke there.
I know. Yeah. it is funny to imagine like what would happen if we tried to sort of reboot ourselves next week, and what different people would we be if we rebooted ourselves, like the way, you know, Grant Morrison's reboot of Superman in the New 52. He's like wearing the jeans and has the cutoff t-shirt and stuff. So
we'll I'm wearing that whole now, new looks. Though, so that's tricky. Yeah,
I was going to be dyeing my hair this week. So maybe it does work for the new 52 next week. But really, it's fun, even though we're going to do a lot more to mark this. I guess probably my biggest surprise is that we stayed to a weekly release. I think that is really, I'm patting us on the back for that.
Yes, I agree. And for me, I think I've come out of this year knowing so much more about comics and these characters, because you really went in as the expert and you are still the expert. But I think I have now come out with a newfound knowledge and newfound appreciation for these characters, these stories, and these multiverses.
I'm a teacher in so many ways. And we'll
it only took doing a podcast for me to actually sit down and listen to you.
And for me to actually be able to teach you without yelling.
That's true. We'll cut those parts out.
we'll remark a lot more on the meaning of our anniversary, because we have a bunch of secret surprise guests joining us for an anniversary special coming in a few weeks. So pay attention to that. Until then, we need your help. We want to keep growing. And so if you're listening to this, can you please share it with two other people this week? Tell two other people on Twitter or on Instagram, which we're not on, or wherever you are, or in life, go to your local comic store. Tell them about us, please. We need your help. We want to grow our listener community in this second year, and we need your help to do that.
Yes. Like Haley Joel Osment said, pay it forward. Or I see dead people.
Yes. I know. I'm like, that's a deeper pull. Mm-hmm. But, all right.
Deep cut.
Onward.
Well, and if you're joining us for the first time, well, I hope you share this wonderful podcast with everybody, but let me give you a quick summary of the alternate Earth we are visiting. So we are going to start with origins of the story, discovering what inspired this other reality. Then we'll move to exploring multiversity, diving deeper into that alternate universe. And finally, pondering possibilities, examining the impact and what's followed or what's coming in the future. And I think there's lots to talk about, especially in that last segment with this issue. So with that, dear watchers, welcome to episode 52, and let's check out what's happening in the multiverse with today's alternate universe. And today we are asking the question, what if Captain America were not revived until today? And today being sometime in the 1980s, not 2022.
A lot more on that when we get into the background on this issue. But before that, let's get a quick summary of Earth 84444. So this is Earth 84444. And on this Earth, Namor in Avengers 4 does not actually find Steve Rogers frozen at the bottom of the ocean. And so the Avengers disband. They have no center of the team, I guess. And we end up with a resurrection of Captain America 4, Bucky 2, who were the 1950s Cap and Bucky. Now, in the Captain America series, we'll look at the moment that is essentially what-if tier, the Divergent moment. They're resurrected in 616 continuity. But here they're resurrected in place of Steve Rogers existing. They become a force for heroism against crime. They want to restore America to its glory. And you can just feel the fascism and racism bleeding out of them as they start to deepen their campaign.
Yeah, they get their approached. Red baseball caps away from certain realities.
They get approached by the Committee to Regain America's Principles, also known as CRAP, which I love. And they are then getting a senator elected who basically wants to start a national ID program, a federal jobs bureau. All of this becomes a way to create a fascistic American government. They pass a bunch of emergency orders to give them complete authority. Meanwhile, a submarine discovers Steve Rogers, Captain America. And so he returns to the U.S. to find a bunch of soldiers, essentially what he calls Nazis, but they're wearing Captain America A's on their heads. There is now a walled-off Harlem. There is a control of the press. People are living in poverty, but they're being told something else. There's a second revolution being fomented in these walled-off areas of cities. In New York, it has Nick Fury, it has Snap Wilson, it has Peter Parker. So Steve Rogers joins them. Meanwhile, we know that Cap and his whole team of cadre secret empire people, we'll go through who they are starting to make their move to really create absolute totalitarian authority. But Cap attacks them and essentially, of course,
the real Cap.
The real Cap beats the fake Cap and does so with some really extraordinary speeches and remarks that are wildly current for today, 2022. Wildly. And we will get into why when we get deeper into the issue, but that is the summary of Earth 84444.
And so real quick, Guido, before we kind of get into our backstories with Captain America, Captain America 4 is the Captain America that was fighting in the 50s. And then this whole kind of a lot of the issues we're going to be talking about today kind of were to retcon that story, because the story we all know is that Steve was trapped in the ice and then came back in the 60s.
Yeah, and I'll give that background when we get to the Captain America issue that brings that character back 10 years prior to the What If. So first, real quick, let's recap. We have talked about Captain America a few times on this show, including our second episode, which is a real great classic. Maybe it's a little long-winded, but a real great classic episode. What if Captain America were elected president? But let's recap our background. What was your background with Captain America?
He was not a character I read too much. In fact, the run of his I had the most was the Rob Liefeld run when I guess
the
that
Heroes
would have been
Reborn.
The Heroes issue. Reborn. Yeah. Exactly. That was the one I was really reading. Never my favorite character because he was a little bit more the normal one, you know, within the Avengers. And of course, I think we both love Chris Evans' performance. But that was about it. I didn't go too deep into him until we really started to do this podcast. And he's still a character I don't know super well because I didn't know this whole 50s backstory with him.
Yeah, for me, it's similar. As people know, I've read comics since the 80s. And so I read some Cap stuff, especially because I read every Marvel event. And he was always involved, especially in the bigger events and especially in the last 20 years. But I was never a huge fan of his solo title. My interest grew more in the last few years when I also developed a love of Mark Gruenwald, who inspired this podcast and had a really iconic and undervalued run on Cap, I'd say. So I started to discover that Cap was actually a much more interesting, at times really strange and kooky, and at times really political and progressive title, and was not as boring as I thought. And but most of my knowledge does come from the last few years in terms of the background of Cap, and other than the last 20, 25 years, where I do know everything that sort of has happened to him as a huge comics fan. And then, yes, I, like everyone, have to love Chris Evans. And there's no choice any of us were given in that pact we all made with the devil.
No, that's true. And Guido, I just have to say, you started reading comics in the 80s. You look so good. Were you frozen in an iceberg somewhere?
Okay, moving right along.
Okay, well, we've talked about our origins with Captain America, but now let's dig into the origins of the story.
Right now on this very show, you're going to get the answer to all your questions. Our amazing story begins a few years ago.
And we're not going to start at the very beginning of Captain America, but let's say the beginning of...
We did that in our second episode, if anyone wants to go back and listen.
Go back and listen to those, but that one. But, you know, the first, let's say, modern Captain America. So that's Avengers number 4 from March 1964, and that's simply titled Captain America Joins the Avengers.
Yeah, so this is written by Stan Lee, penciled by Jack Kirby, inked by George Russos, colored by Stan Goldberg, lettered by Artie Simek, edited by Stan himself. This is the tale destined to become a magnificent milestone in the Marvel age of comics, with the editor's note that both of us laughed at, saying, "We sincerely suggest you save this issue. We feel you'll treasure it in time to come." And we read it because it brings Steve Rogers back to what is, of course, then the modern age from World War II, from having been frozen in World War II. That mythology gets created here in this issue, Avengers number 4, which does complicate things, and we'll get to that in a moment. So what do you think revisiting this issue? We've talked about it before. We've read it before. Super famous. What do you think revisiting?
I mean, I think it's a great issue in a really... I like how it slowly integrates Cap or Steve into then the Avengers story. And I think tying into today's discussion, there's when he wakes up, I think what really stood out for me is that he does still have trauma, even in this like Stan and Jack version, which, you know, is not going as deep as, you know, some of the later versions we're going to talk about. But there's this great moment where he's been asleep and he suddenly wakes up and he says, you know, "Bucky, it's you," because he sees this, you know, teenage figure in the darkness, and it turns out to be Rick Jones. But you kind of still get that mania that, you know, Captain America 4 will really dive into.
Well, the Kirby art helps with that, like that moment you're describing. Yes. He's like bug-eyed.
Wide-eyed, and classic Jack Kirby giant eyeball kind of look. But you kind of get that because so much of Steve is that even keel kind of character. And that does come across in this issue. But here you do get that like crazed, "Hey, this man out of time" kind of element.
Yeah, I think there's also some emotional beats. I mean, right before that moment you're talking about, we have the cop who starts crying because he remembers Captain America, which is, you know, a pretty powerful thing. 1963, like to have a superhero comic have an emotional core where there's a grown man moved to tears. And I know it's perhaps because of something related to American pride or something, but there's a lot going on in this story. There are a lot of layers. There's also just a lot going on in terms of plot. I mean, I forgot that the asparagus creature was, they made it basically that he's Medusa, this alien creature. Yes. And I mean, there's so much in this that I actually, even having just read it a year ago, could not remember. I love at the end, it sort of teases us that Rick is now worried that he's with Cap and Hulk is going to be jealous and like fight him. And like, there's so much set up, there's so much going on. So it's really fun.
Yeah. And I think reading this and reading so many of the issues we're about to talk about, one thing that is lost a little bit in time now is that you know, this was really happening in real time. You know, that Steve had been frozen for 20 years and we're kind of getting that real-time feel of, oh, a person waking up 20 years later. And of course, that's kind of lost with the sliding time scale now. But it really does resonate when you're reading this, putting your mindset into 1964.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So now let's jump ahead to the down and dirty 1970s with Captain America issues number 155 and 156. Those are The Incredible Origin of the Other Captain America from November 1972 and Two Into One Won't Go from December 9th. A very odd title. I don't know what that means, even having read the issue, but that is from December 1972.
So these issues are written by Steve Englehart, penciled by Sal Buscema, inked by Frank McLaughlin, lettered by Gene Izzo, edited by Roy Thomas. And the second 156 is lettered by Sam Rosen. That's the only change there. The first issue also, I should say, gives a credit to John Romita Jr. Actually, John Romita Sr. this is, because it repurposes pages of young men from the 1950s. So a little background. We read these because these are the origin of Captain America 4, who actually until the 2000s is unnamed. But we find out in the 2000s, which we'll get to at some point in this conversation, that his name is William Burnside. So we'll call him William Burnside, but he's also known as Captain America 4. And the reason for that is because over the years, as you pointed out earlier, they had to retcon the fact that Captain America as a character at pre-Marvel publishing, but Marvel ultimately, comics, there were other Captain America stories being told after World War II. But then in 1964, Stan and Jack decide, well, let's pull Captain America back into the Marvel universe and let's do it from World War II. And so they had to fix the fact that, but wait a second, if you want to create a single continuity of all Marvel comics from even pre-Marvel, so now we're talking 1940s through to current, then you have to deal with the fact that a Captain America and a Bucky and a Red Skull somehow existed in the 50s. And so this two-issue arc from the early 70s is an attempt to do that with the character who's ultimately known as Captain America 4. There's two other Captain Americas who serve brief tenures. This is the one who's were understood to have served in the 50s, post-Korean War, big Red Scare stuff going on.
Yeah.
And in these issues of what was known as Young Men or whatever the title is of that comic, so that this is how they try to fix bringing him into our world. Young Men comics.
It's interesting to think that I guess even in 1970s you had continuity nerds that were looking at this and going, wait a second. You know, it feels like that is such a modern construct where people are on Reddit and talking about these kind of things. But it clearly happened in the 1970s that so much that they were aware that they wanted this to, you know, all fit together as one perfect thing. Because they could have easily said, oh, yeah, that happened in the 50s, whatever, you know, skip that. It wasn't real.
Well, I think it's a few factors. I mean, yes, those nerds existed, and I mean, you know, because I've told you, sometimes I've talked about it on here, but I've told you, pointed out to you, just the letters pages from the 60s, 70s, 80s are really amazing things to look at, and you can see that fan culture being created very early in Marvel, and so this is a decade into modern Marvel, and so there is that huge fan culture. And then you also have the presence of someone like a Roy Thomas, who we know is known yes. for that kind of continuity mm-hmm. storytelling. And so it makes sense that this is happening and that there's also a fidelity to that kind of storytelling, which is neat. So I guess a real quick summary of this, what ends up happening is that we find out that William Burnside, who was Captain America 4, was actually a kid who admired the original Captain America. He went to Germany, tracked down the notebooks, found the super soldier serum, brought it to the US government to do testing, but then the Korea, and actually then also got physical cosmetic surgery so that he'd look and sound like Steve Rogers. But the Korean War ends, and he meets Jack Monroe, Bucky 2. Jack Monroe later becomes Nomad and is somewhat inspired to put the uniform on again, which is where then the 50s stories start. But then they are frozen. They're frozen because they're like
going crazy. Yeah.
Right. So they're like, these two are going crazy. They explain it in the story that they have the super soldier serum, but they did not have the whatever the light ray
ion
is.
Beams. Yeah, the light ray that made it so the serum in the real Cap didn't corrupt his mind. But because these two didn't have that, they started to go crazy. Yeah,
the Vita rays. And so without that, they freeze them. But then in the 70s, because Nixon is starting to build bridges with China and Russia, someone who's very anti-communist decides, I need to resurrect those guys. They were really anti-communist. Resurrects them. And that's how we get this two-issue story where Cap 4, Bill Burnside, fights the original Steve Rogers and Sharon Carter and Sam Wilson. And it's a whole fun beach island, Miami Beach set battle with sunburns and bathing suits. And my gosh, wild ride. So where do you want to start with these two?
Well, I think right away, one thing I was struck by is the underlining darkness of these issues and in mainly through our antagonists. And I'm still thinking like, oh, comics didn't really become, you know, dark and serious until, you know, much later. Maybe what we now think of as, you know, the more modern era, the post Alan Moore era. But wow, it's here in these two characters right off the bat. And what's so smart that Steve Englehart does is like he starts with this kind of silly scene of Steve and Sharon on the beach and they're both sunburned. And then it moves, introduces these antagonists. And right away, like when Sam appears, like they are very racist in a way that like still feels very... very shocking, especially in a comic book intended for, you know, mostly children.
Yeah, I think I'd argue, and I think a lot of people would argue this, that Marvel, and I don't think DC has this, but I'm not a DC expert, but Marvel's Bronze Age was a lot darker and was a lot more politically astute than people remember and realize. And in fact, might in some ways be darker and more political than they even allow the comics to be today under the corporate ownership that they have. It is all really there and explicit, even because they also don't construct any fake, like they talk about Democrats, they talk about Republicans, they talk about communists, they talk about, you know, the civil rights in Harlem and the Watts riots and like all of it's in there. Like they are placing it in the real world. And so you can clearly read this. And first of all, you know the writer's positions and you also can take your own position. And that's, I think, been left out of comics in the corporate overlord era.
Yeah. And what Burnside says, which really I think resonates a lot, is that, you know, it's not that it's necessarily... I mean, they are racist, but so much of it is like, hey, you know, by having people speak out, they're crumbling our greater democracy.
Yeah, so it's an argument people use all the time.
You hear right now, it's like, oh, you know, they are right, but, you know, they're correct. You know, we should give, you know, black people more rights, but how they're doing it is not, you know, how we should do it. And like, oh my gosh, that is an argument that you hear today.
Yeah, that's what's so astute about this. And I think that probably came from like the very young, very progressive bullpen culture of New York-based Marvel. But yeah, there are a lot of arguments in here that you hear to this day on a conservative side or on a right-wing side, trying to shut down people who are questioning things about the US or are seemingly just different and looking to embrace that heterogeneous world. So I think it's really fun and great. I even love the sunburn part. Clearly it's done here. I mean, you can tell it's done so we can distinguish the two characters when they're fighting.
Yes.
So we know Steve is the red-skinned one. And then we know that Bill Burnside is the white one.
And they're very consistent with it, because even later, he's, you know, the real Steve still has like this redder skin. So it is a really helpful device from a reader perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the one astute thing is that he's reflective in the end, Steve, about the fact that that could have been him. And something mm-hmm. I think I want to talk about when we get into the what if and more is how many writers take the position of Captain America is a hair away from being yes. like a right-wing bigot. And it's neat that in the end, Steve realizes that. Steve walks away not saying, oh, that's not me. That guy was insane. He walks away saying, that could be me.
Yeah. And I mean, really, I think I'm a big fan of a lot of the movies that came out in the 70s and in this kind of, you know, second golden age, this, you know, Easy Rider, Raging Bulls era that they call it. And you had so many movies that were, you know, telling these kind of dark conspiratorial stories and very American-based stories, you know, Chinatown, All the President's Men, Nashville, Network, that were all kind of talking about these themes. And you see so much of that here, this kind of dark conspiracy, the underbelly of America, really kind of coming out in mainstream film for the first time. And I saw so much of that here. And also, I think there was a rise in, like, say, Chinatown and, like, bringing back, like, the neo-noir. And I got a lot, I don't know if you agree, I got a lot of noirishness from Steve Englehart's writing. Some of the writing he does has that. It's not realistic in the same way that Stan's dialogue is not realistic, but it goes, I think, even a step further into unreality than Stan does. While the story itself, though, remains very realistic because we're experiencing it today.
Well, you even have like the crooked cops, and that's actually, and then there's even the crooked cops in New York, which is a seed being planted for a larger mm-hmm. story that unfolds past these issues. So yeah, I could see a lot of those neo-noir taxi driver yeah. or whatever elements
totally.
In this.
Yeah. And even then, though, there's still like this also this zaniness sometimes from the 70s. So the one cop is nicknamed JW, and that's like JP or JW Culpepper in like the Live and Let Die and the Man with the Golden Gun. There's the Southern cop in those movies. So I think it's almost a reference to yeah, that as well. So he's still like hinting at like also this guy kind of 70s wackiness along with this 70s darkness that you see.
Yeah. So before we move on from this, there are a few other issues that we didn't read, mostly for the sake of time, and they become a little less important. But prior to the what if, we do see William Burnside again. And at that point, he's been brainwashed by Dr. Faustus and becomes a villain called the Great Dictator, who's part of the National Front, which is a white supremacist organization, and he wears a whole white hooded outfit. And that story comes back in the late 70s, lasts for a few issues. He's a great villain with even more politically relevant and depicting a dark side of actual politics and actual American civil rights at the time. And then he ends up killing himself at the end of that story. So that all happens before we get to the what if, but doesn't really pertain to mm-hmm. the alternate universe. So I didn't include them in the reading. So just a side note on that before we head into our alternate universe.
Yes. So let us go into our cryogenic freezing chambers. Pull the lever. We're just going to wait a few years, not 20 years, but we'll wait a few years and open it up into exploring multiversity.
I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
And I feel nice and well rested, which is very important when you're trying to take down the very structures of our democracy. You know, you need a good night's sleep. And today we are, of course, going to be discussing what if issue number 44, what if Captain America were not revived until today from April 1984, although the cover question is simply what if Captain America were revived today?
Yeah, I don't know why that.
And that whole question is a little, doesn't exactly get to the root of this story, but we can get more into that in a second.
So this issue is written by Peter B. Gillis, penciled by Sal Buscema, inked by Dave Simons, colored by George Russo's, lettered by John Morelli, edited by Ralph Macchio. This is pretty late in the run of Volume 1, so Volume 1 is going to end 3 issues from now of What If. Peter B. Gillis wrote a bunch of What Ifs. He is a What If legend, and so this is one in that string. Some of the behind the scenes is actually, he said that every single What If he wrote was a pitch by him. He was not given assignments. And one weekend he was at Ralph's house and Ralph said, "I bet you can't come up with a Captain America." And Peter said with no small sense of self, but well-deserved, he said, "It took me about an hour, but I did it." And what's interesting, the other behind the scenes, although this jumps into the future, but I want to add, because Peter B. Gillis has spoken about this, is that in the last 5 or 6 years in particular, the closing speech here has become an incredibly shared on social media artifact comic book panel. And Peter B. Gillis said, "I actually think I might be becoming a 4th of July Facebook tradition because all these folks reprint that final speech. I wish it weren't as scary as it is today." And so we'll talk about why that's scary. We might even read part of or all of the speech. So I guess I don't know where to start. Where do you have a suggestion where to start? Do you want to start with an overall impression?
Yeah, so all overall impression is, wow, this is an amazing issue, single issue of comics. And I think also this really, I mean, I think the what if question is a little different than, like, I think it presents an alternate reality, which what if does really well. Does it either, like, exactly answer the what if question as posed? I mean, I think that's a little secondary, but, like, in terms of presenting, like, you know, an imaginary story in a way, you know, and telling this alternate reality, I mean, I think this is what the what if series was all about, to tell
stories
like this.
Well, that's what's fun about it, because what makes it, I think, so complex, and it's a really complex issue, is that there's a point of divergence, a single point of divergence. So in this case, Namor bypasses Steve.
Yeah, but all this is Namor's fault.
Well, but then there's the second point of divergence, yeah, which is also a twist on what we see in Captain America 155, which in this story, it's a janitor, though they don't clarify in Captain America 155 who it is that bought Bill Burnside back. But in this case, someone, again, brought Bill Burnside back. They just did it in the absence of Steve.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, that twist, then that twist, and then you get to the actual question, which is what if he's revived today?
Mm-hmm.
And so then he's revived in that alternate reality. So it's, I think that's really cool how multi-layered it is, because obviously mm-hmm. they could have just done what if he was revived today and pretended that all of the Marvel Universe prior to when this is published in 1983 happened, but then we just revive him. But that story potential is a little flatter. This yeah. is great because you get a few twists with a what if question. I mean, I think it's really well constructed in terms of being an alternate universe and a what if, which I love about it. I think it's hard to not just jump to the relevance of this issue. Do you mm-hmm. want to do that, or do you want to talk more about it as a comic first?
No, let's talk about the relevance, because, you know, it's all there on every page. And I also think one of the things that makes this so successful is that it doesn't give us all the answers throughout, which I think sometimes, you know, an Achilles heel of some of the what ifs that we've discussed before on the show, they're trying to cram a lot into a very little. And here, you know, there's one point where, you know, evil Captain America is shot, and we never know who shot him. Was it actually someone who was trying to kill him? Was it part of, like, this greater conspiracy? Like, the
was
comic
it a setup?
Was it a setup? Exactly. Was it a setup? Was it actually someone trying to kill him? It doesn't go into that. The person, the janitor, you know, it purposefully never tells you that character's name, never
and
even shows you
shadowed.
His face.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for sure that was a setup.
Yeah, is it? It almost made me think, like, is this like Nixon's silent majority? Is that what they were trying to say? Or is this someone like who was actually trying to take steps to do this? Like, it doesn't say, hey, we're going to give you all these. It's just going to put those out there. It lets those questions linger in your mind and then instead poses these other questions. It poses more questions than it tries to answer, which I think is actually what great art usually does.
Yeah, I agree. I was curious if that was almost set up to tell more stories in this world, which we'll get to whether or not they do. But I think you're right. It could just be really good storytelling, really good, dense, nuanced storytelling. So jumping to some of the pieces that are just, it's really wild that 40 years on, this can be so significant. So you have the way that Bill Burnside, so Captain America 4, is talking about, he's nostalgic for an old America that used to be unified in fighting against enemies. Mm-hmm. And then he continues in the same way we see in the Captain America series to talk about how students and what he calls minority groups are really burning down America, and that they're the enemies, that they're distracting from the enemies of freedom. And so all of those are arguments that we hear constantly today. And then he starts the way they consolidate power. I mean, it almost feels like a playbook for some of the modern fascism, because, you know, they get, first of all, they want to set America right again. I think it's pretty wild that in 1984, Peter B. Gillis has written Trump's slogan.
Yeah, and they use the phrase America first.
America
as
first,
well.
Which we know is a big white supremacist, white nationalist thing. So they're constantly using that. But the way that Bill Burnside is still able to articulate what appears to be a coherent argument that you can hear some people getting behind. And he goes on and, you know, he talks about how he's not a red baiter, like he's not really trying to position other people as communists, but he's just looking for people to unify. And then what, of course, it turns out is happening is they're just trying to grab at power, whatever it takes to grab at power, which is very, very familiar. And so then after he's shot, he uses that as an opportunity to have greater power be given through martial law. And he's like, I wish this wasn't what we had to do, but we have to do it to take care of this country. And so it's just amazing. And he is able to rally people and use symbols with people and totally destroy society, right? He just puts behind a wall, also a funny point, the parts of society that don't match to what he's doing.
Yeah, that reminded me very much of DMZ, too, where you're segmenting part of the, and just kind of forgetting
or
about it.
From New York.
Or Escape from New York, totally, all those kind of things. But the revolution is actually happening, like, kind of behind those walls, and the rest of the world is kind of not fully aware of it.
Yeah. And so all of that, I mean, it's amazing, too, because he also, when he's talking to, like, that secret cabal of people who all represent, like,
the Serpent Society and all
groups,
these other characters.
Yeah, it's like the Patriotic Lodge, the Secret Empire, the Sons of the Serpent, the National Force. It's all these groups that we've known from comics or actually are sort of created here and then go live on in the 616 canon. So they're all unified just because they all stand to benefit from consolidating power. And then, of course, I'm going to go to the speech at the end is what people share. And I find it incredibly moving. So I guess I should share it.
Sure.
In case people haven't read the issue. So Steve Rogers, Cap, says, "Listen to me, all of you out there. You were told by this man, your hero, that America is the greatest country in the world. He told you that Americans were the greatest people, that America could be refined like silver, could have the impurities hammered out of it and shine more brightly. He went on about how precious America was, how you needed to make sure it remained great. And he told you anything was justified to preserve that great treasure, that pearl of great price that is America. Well, I say America is nothing. Without its ideals, its commitment to the freedom of all men, America is a piece of trash. A nation is nothing. A flag is a piece of cloth. I fought Adolf Hitler not because America was great, but because it was fragile. I knew that liberty could as easily be snuffed out here in Nazi Germany as people we were no different from them. When I returned, I saw that you nearly did turn America into nothing, and the only reason you're not less than nothing is that it's still possible for you to bring freedom back to America. And that speech is what inspires everyone to realize that Steve is the real Cap, that the Bill Burnside imposter is not. And then he refuses to be their leader because he thinks that they need to understand that they all have the power, and that's what inspires it. I cannot believe how relevant, even in the last 2 weeks, that speech is.
Yeah. And I think it actually happens not in this issue, but in the previous ones we discussed, although it might pop up here as well. You know, when Burnside is called, you know, a fascist, you know, he totally rejects that, but yet he is, you know, he's talking about, you know, his hatred for Hitler, and yet he's doing these things at the same time.
Yes. In the 616 issues we read, he calls him Hitler and he's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. And that's exactly a sentiment I think that you see now here, and in Russia too, and all, you know, so many places, that argument. I think it's an amazing speech. It's an amazing moment. A couple of things that I was thinking that were different from what we see now is, I think the Burnside character, while he is, you know, the antagonist, of course, and is, you know, ultimately this fascist, Peter McGillis does paint him a little bit more naive, I think, maybe because he's mentally unstable. He is being controlled by this other cabal. And I think that's a big difference that we're seeing today, is like the face of the movements are the people in charge, not necessarily being controlled by this shadowy group. What do you think about that? Because they,
I mean, he even Steve says at one point, oh no, it's actually Burnside talking about freedom and then people sell us out to our enemies. So you even get a sense of like the way other countries are starting to manipulate America, or that's his fear here, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's Burnside's fear, which of course is a possible reality we're living in.
Yeah. He definitely does seem like, I mean, like, I think one of the things that Peter Gillis does so well is that he does make this character despicable and yet understandable at the same time. And I think it's the same thing that Steve Englehart does in some of the other ones. But I think actually Gillis takes it a step further and really kind of showing that, hey, this is like not even a wolf in sheep's clothing, because I think he really believes that he is the sheep, bringing the lamb that's bringing this in often.
Yeah, I think that makes him a lot more interesting.
Yeah, no, totally. He's not the mustache twirling villains is like the group of the people that, you know, are actually controlling him. And he really is trying to do this because he thinks he's doing the right thing, even though he certainly is not.
What's cool, though, is that there's even no redemption for him in the end. Like, even in the final battle, you have Steve, who I'm assuming is the protagonist we're all supposed to identify with his views, who says to him, "You're everything I was meant to fight, monster. Your hatred of others, your denial of others' humanity. You're a Nazi smear on the American flag." Mm-hmm. So there's really, even though he is motivated by beliefs and values, there's no redeeming him. He made the wrong choices in that, and I think that's a really powerful message in terms of sometimes people looking to find compromise or to, you know, quote unquote reach across the aisle. It's like, well, at a certain point, your hatred of others and your denial of others' humanity makes you a Nazi smear on the American flag. Yes. So
totally. And I think one thing two that resonated with this issue and the previous ones, because I almost think they, even though this is in a different earth, I feel like they are so much of one story, is I think it's key also having the characters that are not, you know, the blonde white guy in the story. Sharon and Sam play crucial roles in the other issues 155 and 156. I don't think it would be the same story if you did not have a black man and a woman there.
Oh, and there's and lots here, of comments about race and gender.
Oh, yeah, and gender. And here, too, while, you know, you get, you know, characters that are identifiably Jewish in, like, the sailor that is on the ship, and, you know, you get, you know, Wilson again and the Reverend as well that is running, you know, the original protest. So, like, there are these characters. It isn't just, okay, we're going to tell the story of, you know, the one white savior in Steve Rogers. No, there is this kind of world. And you even have J. Jonah Jameson, who's kind of typically this kind of antagonist, but is still, you know, fighting for the freedom of the press and is actually helping them as well.
Well, you even have, and this is one of the examples of another Bronze Age way that it's dark and paints a real picture of reality, because you even have Burnside, the corrupt Captain America, talking about trying to wrest control from the Jewish bankers and the black radicals.
Yes. So yeah.
You don't just, these characters aren't just placed in, like, it's a key part of the story, who's mm-hmm. here and who's yes. being represented and who's fighting for freedom. And so it's so cool that this was done, that it was published, and that it's become significant. Like you said, it is one of those issues that I think has influenced people's understanding of this era. I think people probably think this is almost a canonical story in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It could be, other than, you know, there's a whole lot of history that it wouldn't jive with a 616, but it almost could be canonical. So we actually have never revisited this Earth ever before. Not in glimpse, not in anything. This Earth has never been revisited. So before we move on to the future issues that we looked at, would you want to go back to this Earth for more story?
Yeah, I think I would, but I wouldn't want to go after this issue ends, right? Because we're hoping, you know, that things change for the better. Maybe not. It has could have that almost Star Wars kind of thing where, you know, the evil empire is still lurking on the perimeter, but I think there's more stories to be told within the world that's here, and we even jump in time throughout this issue as well. So exploring, you know, Peter Parker as this mercenary revolutionary in mm-hmm. Harlem.
That's true. And what they call the Second American Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. You could explore that whole group.
Yeah. We know S.H.I.E.L.D. was dismantled, you know, what happened there as well. And Nick Fury is a character here, you know, exploring all these other characters and seeing what was the lead up to this.
You want to see almost like the big event titles where then they have the spin-off miniseries that tell you facets. Like, you'd like to see the spin-off miniseries that show facets of this story. See, mm-hmm. I think I'm game for that, but I'm okay with a sequel because at this point in the world, I need someone to imagine a way out of where we are right now. And I'd like to see that. I'd like someone, Peter B. Gillis or someone else, to imagine how we get out of where we are right now, because this just gets you right to the turning point. It doesn't actually tell you how the rest of America responds and what happens and what the path forward looks like. It just ends. It literally ends with people singing America the Beautiful. Like, it just ends at the turning point. So I would like to know then what happens. I need that utopian path painted for me in art and hopefully then translated into real life.
Yeah. Because there's this moment in that final moment of them singing America the Beautiful where it could almost feel like that Steve could become the king, right? They're just going to appoint Steve the new ruler, and it's almost that like George Washington kind of thing where like it took that power to like step down and like pass it along, so that feels like it is like the next challenge in this story is what happens next.
Well, but he says you followed someone in my outfit once and he's evil, so I'm not gonna let you do that. So what does that look like, and how does he do that, and can Peter B. Gillis help direct our current government on that path? That's what I would like to know.
Yes, well, let's ponder those possibilities in our next segment, which is called Pondering Possibilities.
Will the future you describe be averted?
So Guido, we're going to jump into the 2000s and 2010s now. And how did you come up with this list of possibilities?
So with such a complex issue, I really spent a lot of time on preparing for this episode. So as I said, the Bill Burnside as the great dictator actually predates the What If. And we use our rule that we will only read issues that follow the alternate universe so we can look at any inspiration that might have come from that. So then I tracked out Bill Burnside, basically. So we are reading his return into the 616 to see if it feels like it's at all influenced by this What If. I did consider one big thing I considered, I have to say, is Secret Empire. Secret Empire is, of course, somewhat controversial, pretty well received, but very complex and convoluted. I reread pretty much half of Secret Empire to try to see if there was an element of that, because you have the Cap as Hydra, the evil Cap, take over the US, and then it turns out that that's not truly Cap, and you have the fighting Caps. And so I was really looking to see if there was something in that, some issue, even in the prelude, in the spinoff, in the main title, that hit at some of the themes of What If, and I didn't see it. So I stuck with Bill Burnside and gave us what we're about to dive into.
Mm-hmm. So first up, we have Captain America issue number 38 from July 2008, and that is The Man Who Bought America Part 2.
And I think we're going to talk about these two together.
Okay, and then that other one is Captain America issue 602. That is from March 2010, and that is Two Americas Part 1. So we got a Part 2 and a Part 1, but not the other parts of those parts.
I'll explain why in just a moment. So issue 38 from 2008 is written by Ed Brubaker, penciled by Steve Epting, inked by Mike Perkins and Steve Epting, colored by Frank D'Armata, lettered by Joe Caramagna, edited by Tom Brevoort. And issue 602, they return, of course, to the legacy numbering there in 2010, is still being written by Ed Brubaker, penciled by Luke Ross, inked by Butch Geis and Luke Ross, colored by Dean White, lettered by Joe Caramagna, edited by Tom Brevoort. And the reason I think we're linking them, even though they're a few years apart, is that these are two pieces of the two main stories, actually the two only stories, that bring Bill Burnside back. So both of them are during Brubaker's run, which of course is the death and eventual return of Captain America. So in the first issue, we're in an arc that's bringing Bill Burnside back, and Bucky is being Cap. Cap is dead. And in the second issue, Steve's returned.
Steve's alive now.
But he's staying away with Sharon. Bucky's still being Cap. And we have Bill Burnside showing up yet again. And mm-hmm. these follow the continuity, again, follows the great dictator story that we did not read from the late 70s, where Bill Burnside becomes the great dictator, brainwashed by Faustus, kills himself. And that's actually recapped in issue 38 a little bit at the beginning by Sharon, who thinks it's Steve and realizes it's not. It's Bill Burnside, Captain America 4. So what do you think of these? And then we can talk about some connections.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Because
you've
like
never read any Brubaker run, I'm assuming.
No, I have not. So this was definitely new to me. And I like how, I think, in the first issue, The Man Who Bought America, Part 2, that how he introduces Burnside back. And there's almost this kind of Frankenstein monster-esque quality, because he doesn't quite know where he is, and he's deformed from these burns as well. And you know, he encounters Sharon, who's going to kill him, but then she's incapacitated. And I think it continued kind of what Gillis does, where, you know, you take this reprehensible character, but also try to find ways to make him not likable, but, you know, that there's a little bit of understanding to who he is, and in this case, a little more compassion in some ways.
Well, and in this, he's flat out, like, because in 616 he's brainwashed, in this he's being brainwashed again. So mm-hmm. he is a little bit being positioned as the victim in this storyline, because they're using him to get this third wing party elected, which is very similar to the What If, in fact.
Yes.
It's this fake party they create to essentially take over America for their own profit. And that's being done through his brainwashing and through the manipulation. Mm-hmm. In another issue, they do an attempted, they stage a attempted assassination on the person who's running for president, actually, and have Captain America save him. So it all is very similar to the What If in that, in the political way.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things that is not realistic for its times, or has proven not to be true, I should say, is they don't really, we, turns out they didn't need a third party to do it. You know, you can do it within the two-party system.
You can do it from within.
But you often see that in, I think, like Cronenberg's, David Cronenberg's The Dead Zone as well. There's often a character who represents like this third party that is like the shining light.
The What If also, the What If ultimately, the Senator Chadwick that they end up getting elected in the What If, he at one point, Burnside says, he's not Democrat or Republican, he's a third party.
Yeah.
So it's the same idea. So yes, I think since 2008, we've learned that it doesn't require a third party to completely destroy, corrupt, and take over the American government.
Yes. In fact, in this issue, in the presidential candidate, or the senator candidate, or I guess whoever he is, says the right wing and the left wing have gotten us to this stalemate. It's time for a new wing, a third wing, to unite us all. So you do get that sense of, oh, there's something else. But so that's the one unrealistic part of these stories.
And so at the end of this, Burnside, you know, just sort of vanishes at the end of that short storyline. And then a year and a half later comes back. And that's the next issue, where we have him flashing back to his childhood. We get his name for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that he's actually created basically a militia of working people.
Yeah. And I mean, on the very first, on the title splash page, it says, he says, and then we go get our country back now. So you totally get that right away. This sense of getting our country back as this.
And it's even called Two Americas. And this is
totally
12 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. And even during this protest, I think there's a lot with that you even heard at the time, even, or still hear, where, you know, someone says, you know, no government in my Medicare, you know, that in one of the protest signs, like this contradiction there.
Well, one of the issues too, they're talking about, it might be one of the issues of this storyline that we didn't read, but I skimmed them all. They talk about gas prices being a stressor for people and why they were willing to vote for a third party. In this issue, of course, we have Sam pretend to be a tax collector. And because he's both black and a tax collector, this town is going to really turn on him. And that's how Bucky is going to then get in with the militia group that Burnside is running. Mm-hmm. So,
And I saw, this was my first time reading this. I definitely saw where some of the Falcon and Winter Soldier series kind of pulled from, because you get that kind of Sam Bucky dynamic here. And already in these issues, Sam really being more the actual leader, even though Bucky is quote unquote captain, you know, even though he's in the Captain America uniform at this point, I get Sam as really being the one who's the true leader. And that kind of dynamic, it's not as goes as far as I think the Disney Plus series did, but you certainly see it here as well.
Yeah. So reading just these two issues of these stories, do you think that the alternate universe from the What If could have inspired them?
Yes, totally. I mean, I think definitely the 2008, but also knowing that these are both written by Ed Brubaker, I mean, it definitely seems that he is taking something from that Peter Gillis run. And maybe that we know, I don't know if the meme had become, if it had become a meme at this point, but
no,
knowing that
not
that was...
to Gillis.
But knowing that it was eventually more in the public consciousness than, you know, most other What Ifs, almost any other What If, I wouldn't be surprised if Brubaker was very aware of it then.
Yeah. I think it's also, I agree, I do think that the What If was an inspiration, whether it was explicit or just because, he had absorbed it at some point, or it was in the ether already in 2010, though I think it was a little later. But it's also hard to distinguish two really good storytellers who have a really well-developed, who like writing about politics and have a really well-developed sense of how they're going to do that and how they're going to use Captain America to tell those stories. So I think there could be similarities that just have to do with that kind of storytelling. And it's interesting in the 08 and 10 because you do see a little bit more of that fictionalization to try to stay out of current politics. They still, again, name Democrats and Republicans, but this creation of this whole fake third party and stuff keeps them a little more sanitized, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But Brubaker still goes there for sure and has a perspective on, you know, division and people exploiting economic depression to try to create power for themselves and what that means. And yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think. And as you said, I think one of the interesting things about the Captain America character, and you know Superman better than I do, so this does feel like it's also true of Superman, is exploring that, what is that thin line between being the hero and being the villain. Mm-hmm. And you know, and because you take a character like Batman or even someone like, you know, the X-Men, where there's a lot more ambiguity in their actions, they have that darkness here. The Superman and Captain America are so light, they're so bright, it's even reflected in their costumes. There's an inherent story in exploring a Burnside character like this, you know, that and where does he go and what does that mean to wear that suit?
Yeah, well, I think we talked about it maybe with JLA Created Equal, I don't know, but there are so many stories of corrupt Superman being mm-hmm. told, and I think that's a reason why. What I think is interesting about Captain America is, of course, as soon as you're going to tell that story, you have to bring in nationalism and politics.
Yes.
Because it is built into the character. The character is nothing. Now, people have made Superman very political, and some of those stories have been great and some less so. But I think with Captain America, you can't avoid it. And I'm curious where that will go in our world. Secret Empire, of course, getting so much attention. I mean, there was some pretty horrific stuff that Nick Spencer dealt with because of that. The writer, Nick Spencer, just death threats and really wild stuff because of trying to tell this story and probing what it means. So I suspect we'll have a lot of conservatism in terms of that kind of storytelling. You know, Falcon and Winter Soldier scratches the surface ever so gently in terms of what race does when it intersects mm-hmm. with Captain America. But I don't know that we'll get a story that leans in quite as much as Gillis's What If ever again,
no,
sadly.
I have a hard time thinking that we'll lean in that much in the movies, especially maybe more in the comics, which you know better than I do. But I could certainly see aspects of the Burnside character being combined with the U.S. agent character and taking some of the, which was started to already be explored in the series, where the U.S. agent might also be losing his grip on reality as well. So I could certainly see them putting some more of the fascistic elements of the Burnside character into that other character, but keeping him kind of as U.S. agent, since it, of course, like the whole backstory with Burnside being, you know, cosmetically looking exactly the same as Steve Rogers / Chris Evans, you know, is not a story that they can really tell in the movies.
Maybe Chris Evans would come back for that. But
I do think this could be like an amazing acting opportunity for Chris Evans, like to come back and like play a dual character or just play the evil version of this character. Yeah. Like, I think if there's one thing that could take him back into the MCU, I think that acting challenge of being the bad guy finally, which he kind of got to do in Knives Out too. I think like it's the more fun role to play, frankly.
I think the U.S. agent point you made, though, is true somewhat, but I think it's going to stay so apolitical, which is what we've seen in these issues, is that none of them do. So I think we will deal with U.S. agent and questions of aggression, certainly, maybe even questions of masculinity. I could see them exploring a little bit, but I don't know that they're going to lay on top of him a racist, fascistic, anti-social justice, anti-equality lens. I don't know that we'll see that, but that would be nice.
Yeah. Do you think some of these themes, though, have actually maybe played out in other comics, like Krakoa in X-Men. I mean, that's something like that seems like it's able to actually deal with some of these darker politic questions.
Yeah, but those have been complete. It would be completely through metaphor or allegory or whatever the right word is, because none of that is taking place in any real place. So yeah. Even though it even involves geopolitics and they go to the World Economic Forum and the G8 in an early issue, but it's still all through fictional probing of those questions. I think what's so powerful about this What If is that it's using language, it's using characters, it's using political perspectives, and it's using political maneuvers that are real.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very compelling story. And I'm sure they were real in 1984, right? It's just sad that 40 years later they ring true yet again. But So that's all I've got to say about that joyful moment in celebrating our country.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, both of us have been unanimous. If you're listening to this on the 4th, you know, you can read these issues on the Marvel Unlimited app. I think it's definitely a good read, you know, regardless of the time of year. But if you're reading it, you know, anytime around the 4th or around, you know, some of the more recent current events in the U.S. and certainly around the globe, I think it's a very timely read and should be read.
Yes. And so I have been your cynical watcher, Guido.
And I have been your commie fruit, Rob. And that's a wrap. Dear Watchers, thank you so much for listening.
The reading list is in the show notes. You can follow us, engage with us on Twitter at Dear Watchers.
Please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and please spread the word about our podcast any way that you can. We'll be back soon with another trip through the multiverse.
In the words of Uatu, keep pondering the possibilities.